I'm really excited to be co-presenting with Trina and Ildiko from Garden for the Environment and Sutro Stewards. And just first of all, thank you so much for all that SHARP has done to support our work over the years, especially in the Green Hare Street corridor. It's just awesome. You've done so much with your help. So I have a short presentation, or we're each going to speak for 15 minutes each, and then there are going to be time for question and answers. Ready. Okay. So Nature in the City was founded in 2005, and our mission is to connect everyone in San Francisco to nature by cultivating and conserving habitats. We're here tonight to talk about San Francisco Environment's Climate Action Plan. The plan was built on the 2013 Climate Action Plan and the 2019 Focus on 2030 report. And the new plan aims to achieve net zero greenhouse gas for the city emissions by 2050 across six key sectors. And our groups tonight, especially Sutro Stewards of Nature in the City, are going to focus on the healthy ecosystems sector of the plan. So what the SF Environment thought was really needed was a comprehensive plan for the Healthy Ecosystems chapter to leverage local natural ecosystems to sequester carbon on the water, land, and along the coastline. So this project is a Pier 94 project by Golden Gate Audubon, and they're restoring a healthy marsh borderline there, right at the bay edge. And as you can see, the difference between that cement part of the port of San Francisco and this wetlands buffer area with these kind of natural pools and wetlands all around the bay act as a huge sponge that connect all of that water to healthy plants and carbon sequestration, where it could easily just creep up and kind of really get into all of these building projects that are built right up to the shore edges of the bay and in San Francisco. So that's one of the strategies that we're really trying to employ in this plan. And in Nature in the City's work, we're working on a project called Paloo Phelps Park and Open Space. And as you go around San Francisco, you'll see like Bernal Hill and McLaren Park, Paloo Phelps Park, Twin Peaks. A lot of our hilltops are remnant grasslands. So grasslands are one of the most endangered habitats in the northern US. And they sequester a huge amount of carbon. So the underground roots of these big bunch grasses that were historic could sequester as much carbon as a tree. And trees are susceptible to disease and fire. And then can fall over, whereas grasses can be grazed down to the soil level and then store all that carbon and healthy nutrients underneath the soil. So we really believe that grassland is a huge benefit to helping restore ecosystems to health and also sequester carbon. We also, in the Healthy Ecosystems chapter of the plan, is fostering biodiversity. It's a layered approach where we're fostering community, biodiversity. And so SHARP has supported our work in the Green Hare Street corridor to restore habitat for a small green iridescent butterfly that's flying right now. So if you want to ask questions about that, or visit natureinthecity.org and you'll find out more about that. So restoring biodiversity is really part of the Healthy Ecosystems plan. And it's really nice that there's a comprehensive approach that has these different strategies built in. We also work to provide access to native plants with our Backyard Natives Nursery Network. So we have volunteers like Sophia and others on the call today, taking plants home and raising them in their backyards and then bringing them back to help restore habitat with us in public sites. We also work to empower the public to participate in our volunteer programs, our public walks, and with our Wild SF Gardening Services program and engagement with local schools. We also work to strengthen partnerships. And this is all kind of components of the plan, and then also things that we really do as part of our strategy to support a healthy climate here in the city. So this work is at Sunset Boulevard. It's a partnership with Climate Action Now. And so you can see if we can create these demonstration gardens of native plants that are lush and rich, we can really create greater biodiversity, sequester carbon, and showcase what is possible, just like is happening at Garden for the Environment and at the top of Mount Sutro. And also we really believe in the strength of building partnerships to support a broad coalition to achieve big goals, because none of our groups can do this work alone, and it's actually just not as much fun. A couple of ways you can support our groups or Nature in the City is hire our Wild SF gardening team to help transform your backyard into a healthy ecosystem. So we know that public space is only part of the puzzle here in the city. If we want to try to make some impact in this little place where we live on the planet, your backyard is a really great way to get even more intimate with local ecosystems and carbon sequestering plants and pollinators. This is a bush tit on that one side, and here is a Gulf fritillary butterfly. And joining these local organizations is a great way to support the work. And so we all have ways to support and give and donate. Nature in the City has a membership. And I know Sharp has a membership. I just joined the other day. I was very excited. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Trina, Garden for the Environment. And thank you so much. I'll stop my screen share.
Okay, and I will start my screen sharing here. One moment, present. Okay, so my name is Trina Lopez, and I am the manager of adult public programs at Garden for the Environment. And one thing I wanted to say really quickly is that Garden for the Environment isn't directly involved in the climate action plan and the organization of it, but our aims align with supporting healthy local ecosystems and really teaching the public how to foster those in their own backyards and their local areas. So as Dennis mentioned, we are at 7th Avenue and Lawton, and our URL is gardenfortheenvironment.org. And we are San Francisco's teaching garden. So we just celebrated our 30th anniversary in July of 2020. And we began as one of the last gardens that was established by the now defunct organization, SLUG, so San Francisco League of Urban Gardeners, if any of you remember that at all. And we really ended up surviving because the organization at that point decided to become its own nonprofit, and we're currently fiscally sponsored by the Parks Alliance, San Francisco Parks Alliance. We are on San Francisco Public Utilities land, so a huge part of what we do is to carry out their goals of creating healthy ecosystems, keeping our waters clean by not putting chemicals into them, into the sewer systems and whatnot. So that's what we do, and they are our primary funder. And we have a lot of things going on at GFE. Because we're a teaching garden, we're really constantly reaching out to the public and trying to find ways to get people involved. So we educate people of all ages in San Francisco and the Greater Bay Area to grow both perennial and edible gardens. And we have adult workshops, volunteer programming, and youth programming. And I'll tell you a little bit about how we've had to pivot our efforts during this COVID period. So a big aim of ours is just to educate people about the importance of climate appropriate, water conservative, and chemical-free gardening to help make San Francisco a healthier and more beautiful place to live. And we are, of course, a demonstration garden. So anytime you walk through our garden, the plants that you're going to see there, both the edible and perennials, demonstrate these concepts. And it's one of the main goals, but it's not necessarily one that people think about very often or concretely, but we really function in a way like a bit of a park. And so we really want to provide a welcoming, safe, and beautiful environment for the local community so that people can explore and they can relax and they can maybe learn a little bit along the way. And this has been really, really important during the COVID period because we never close. You know, people can come and go as they please. And especially at the beginning of COVID, you know, people were asked to stay close to home, so they didn't go very far. So it meant that the folks right near us, especially in the big tower apartments just above GFE, we were their open space to go find some relief from shelter in place. So it was just really lovely to see people using the space in this way and for the space to find a new value. So again, we do a lot of programming at GFE and we do all ages programming. So one of the main things we do, we have what I call formal and informal education. So informal education is volunteering. So anybody can walk into our garden when we have our volunteer hours. This is normally, there's an asterisk on a lot of what I'm saying here. So they can come into our garden, and I love when people come in and they say, I don't know anything about gardening. I'm like, you know, that's great, because then you have everything to learn today. Everything's going to be new. I could teach you anything and it's going to be brand new to you. So that's fantastic. So we welcome individuals, small groups, families to come in on Wednesdays and Saturdays to learn about gardening. So when we get past, I find myself saying in pre-COVID times, but it's true. So in pre-COVID times, and then hopefully not too long in post-COVID times, we will just offer volunteer hours to people from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. They can come whenever they want during that time period and stay for as long as they like. At the current time, we're going to start opening up volunteering to the general public, but through registration only to really regulate group sizes so that everybody feels safe and comfortable. So you can go on our website under the workshops area and you'll find signups for our volunteer program. So another big thing that we do is youth programming. So in a regular year, we offer in-person field trips for students, primarily students from San Francisco Unified School District. And we offer about 30 field trips in each semester. And our youth programming manager, Jamie Wallum, did a fantastic job of coming up with a very bare bones but functional live stream system. So what we've been doing in the fall and the spring is she and the educational assistant, Chris Krupa, were doing up to 3 live stream field trips every Tuesday. And so it was a great way for students to see the garden and to learn about it, even though they couldn't actually be in it. So we're finding too that some teachers are asking us if we can actually continue doing it this way, because it's less effort than trying to get a bus full of kids to the garden. So our programs will be adapting, we may end up keeping some online programming once COVID is over, just because it fulfills a different need for the garden. So, oops, just trying to advance my slide here. That's weird. Here we go. Okay. And we offer, of course, more formal adult public programming. So we offer a wide variety of adult public programs that teach people about growing perennial gardens and edible gardens that, again, are appropriate to San Francisco's special climate. So what we often call a summer dry climate, and also mild climate, you know, where we can grow things year round, which is fantastic, but we can't grow those wonderful things like tomatoes and peppers that people like when they're in hot locations. So we teach them what they can successfully grow in the city, and to also teach them to do it with the fewest number and ideally no chemical inputs, so that we keep our environment clean and healthy. So again, we've adapted a lot of our programs to the Zoom format since July of last year. And we'll slowly be returning to in-person programming. And I will tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. So some of the types of program we offer are really kind of the backbone of our programming are 2-hour workshops. So we have a monthly Grow Your Own Food workshop that tells you how to plant and tend to your edible crops throughout the year. We have a really popular free monthly urban composting workshop, and that's sponsored by the Public Utilities Commission. We usually have about three beginning beekeeping classes throughout the year. So our first in-person class this year is going to be May 22nd. And it's just a group of 10 people that we're teaching, and they're going to come in and they're going to learn about beekeeping. We just had an urban chickens class last Saturday. We offer two rainwater harvesting classes a year and then a variety of other kind of one-off classes. Okay, and we have a couple of series. So one is called the Sustainable Series. That is sponsored by the Public Utilities Commission, and it's a three-part series that is for 2 hours on three Saturdays in a row. And it teaches participants the basics of growing climate-appropriate perennial gardens. So the first session is about garden design, the second one is about water and irrigation, and the third one is about what we call integrated pest management. And that's offered three times a year, and the next one will be in June. And then we have one called Dig In. So that's a six-part series that concentrates, that really delves deep into raising edible crops. And we usually even have them build a garden bed when they're in this class. So really hands-on, and we get them really engaged. And then, oops, I think I missed one here. Ah, GetUp, yes. I don't want to forget GetUp. So GetUp is our biggest program of the year. And this was established in 1996. And the GetUp program trains folks in urban agriculture and in compost too. So they really become compost ambassadors for GFE and for the city. So they help co-teach urban composting class after they graduate, and they do a 40-hour garden community service project, either at GFE, another local organization, or they can do a combination of both. So normally it's a three-month program, and it is September through December at the garden, but because of having to cancel it due to COVID last year, we decided to see if it was possible to do it online, and we're right in the midst of that right now, and it seems to be going very well. So we're really happy. We have a class of 22 very eager and enthusiastic adult learners with us. And we are really hoping, though, that we can get back in the garden in the fall and get to teach everybody in person and get them really engaged, you know, get them pruning and digging and planting and all of that. It's a little hard to do when you're on Zoom. So we're really excited for the day when we can do this again in person. And I just wanted to thank Sharp for their generous support of GFE over the years. We're just really thankful that you help promote our workshops and our different activities that we have going on at the garden. And so I just wanted to say that this additional Sharp funding as a collaborative effort with Nature in the City and Sutro Stewards will really help GFE expose our audience to other ways to get involved with these nearby organizations that really share a lot of the same goals and aspirations for just making this a more, you know, again, a healthier, beautiful place to live. And all those little efforts really add up. So if we can really start, you know, pun intended, if we can start that cross-pollination between the three groups, and we joke, we're just like, we're the triangle here, right? And why are, you know, I'm really looking forward to connecting with both of your organizations more. And the one thing that GFE has where we can offer panel discussions and possibly some workshops is in our outdoor classroom spaces. So we have some really lovely spaces there where we can host events and really start building that interconnectivity between the three of us. So we're really looking forward to being involved in this and just kind of finally getting to the point where we make this happen between the three organizations. And that is all. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. So I think that's my cue. I'm going to share my screen and then I'll get started. Okay, there we are. So my name is Ilda Kopalani. I'm the Executive Director of Sutro Stewards. Our mission is to build community, connect people with nature, and protect and enhance Mount Sutro, one of the city's wildest and most beautiful green spaces. I'll tell you a little bit about Sutro Stewards. I'm gonna talk a little bit about the Climate Action Plan, about the importance of natural solutions to climate change, healthy ecosystems, role in mitigating climate change, and then also the potential of this partnership that's just budding between our three organizations. So Sutro Stewards was founded in 2006 by a man named Craig Dawson, who actually grew up across the street from the mountain on Christopher. Craig grew up like running the hills, you know, totally dense eucalyptus forests, sort of making his way beneath the blackberry brambles, you know, a native San Franciscan, and eventually very involved in the community as you know, he grew up, and eventually got a group of volunteers together to basically lobby the University of San Francisco that owns the 61-acre open space to say, look, volunteers love, you know, citizens, residents of San Francisco love this mountain. We want to create trails so that more people can safely access the mountain, and we want to care for this space. So in 2006, Sutro Stewards was born. And the first thing they did was really focus on opening up the mountain, on providing trails through this dense like eucalyptus plantation, really, so that people could enjoy this previously pretty inaccessible place. The other thing that the trails do, in the process of clearing the trails, Craig, I think Jake Sigg, who I think is in the room, was also part of this effort, actually discovered remnant native plants that in some cases had been thought to have been extirpated or lost to the city of San Francisco. So what we're looking at here in this image is an intersection with the Ferry Gates Trail and I think the historic trail. And this is one of our little native plantings. So not only does opening up the forest with trails for people to, you know, hike and bike and, you know, enjoy time with their families, but it also opens it up so that we can get in there and we can start planting native plants. So our restoration depends on our native plant nursery. And here's some of our volunteers, you know, a few years ago, up planting little plants. We collect the seed from remnant populations of native plants on Mount Sutro. We take the seed back to our nursery, clean it, store it, and then propagate here for planting days. So this is an image of volunteers just last week, I think. This is a picture I took. We have our beautiful yarrow plant in the foreground there. Yarrow is a plant that grows circumpolar, but it's also native to California. It's a hugely medicinal plant. It's one that humans have been using for, I think, since Neanderthal times, really, like so 60 plus thousand years. And this is our meadow. This is our rotary meadow. So this is one of our, you know, if you have a chance to get up to Mount Sutro, you haven't already seen this site. This is actually the one that's the closest to what Mount Sutro might have looked like before, is on the summit of the mountain. So, you know, more than 100 years ago is when the eucalyptus were first planted by Adolf Sutro. But before that, it was rolling coastal prairie, sand dunes, and coastal scrub habitat. So these are, maybe you know this already, but California is a biodiversity hotspot. So one of the top 25 in the world. The Bay Area within California is even a more biodiverse place than other places in the state. And so you can imagine that this mountain actually was called Blue Mountain in the beginning, before Adolf Sutro owned it and started planting all the eucalyptus trees. And we think, we hypothesize that that was because at the time of colonial settlement, there was sort of a blue hue to the mountain from maybe ceanothus, blooming ceanothus, which actually there were a lot of images in Trina's presentation of ceanothus in bloom. Maybe lupin. Lupin can sometimes have a blue tinge to it. The coastal scrub plant community. Also, there's, you know, dozens of different species of plants in that community, and they tend to form these cascading mounds and these beautiful interwoven patterns that can sometimes have a blue look to it. You know, and as I talk about the Blue Mountain and one of the more original names to this place, it's also just important to acknowledge that that we are on Ohlone land, and that it was Ohlone people who were the stewards of this land. And you know, just as you see these lovely stewards tending the mountain, you know, we can learn from past practices and traditional ecological knowledge. And these intimate relationships that humans have had with nature for, you know, since the beginning of human existence, to learn how to restore the damage that we've done. So that's really what the Climate Action Plan in my mind is about, is especially the Healthy Ecosystems chapter. It's about restoring the damage that we've done. You know, so we've had thousands of years of agriculture. We've had 200 plus years, 300 years, depending on when you start counting, of you know, industrialization. Now we're facing extreme weather. Fire season is longer than it ever was before. We had that orange sky day last year, right? The city of San Francisco passed a climate emergency resolution in the end of 2019, which spurred looking at ARC, the climate action plan that had been on the books, and saying, you know, this really has to be ramped up. So, you know, there's the think globally, act locally. And that's, our organizations do that on the hyper-local level. The city of San Francisco is doing that on a slightly broader, more regional level. But all of this must connect together. So this is from the current planning process of the Climate Action Plan. So building healthy soils, this is so much of the composting classes that Garden for the Environment offers. Also the perennial gardening that they focus on, that Garden for the Environment focuses on, builds healthy soils. So annual gardening, annual vegetable gardening, a lot of this, our dependency on annual vegetables in our industrial agriculture system requires tilling of the soil, which releases carbon into the atmosphere. And as we know, it's an excess of carbon in the atmosphere that has us in this problem. So when Amber was speaking about our native perennial grasslands and the potential they have for sequestering carbon into the soil, that's really where it needs to go. It's been released from the soil through the burning of fossil fuels, through tilling, and we have a depletion of carbon in our soil. So building healthy soil allows our plants to grow stronger, which sequesters more carbon, which, you know, you see it's a positive feedback loop. So that's one of the really exciting things about restoring habitat, is that, you know, it starts with the plant. Like Amber talks about the green hair streak butterfly, which is such an adorable, beautiful little butterfly, but it needs specific plants to lay its eggs on. So those plants don't come from China. They don't come from Argentina. They come from the place where the butterfly evolved. So you plant that plant, the coast buckwheat. I think there's two other host plants that it can lay its eggs on, but you plant that plant and then the butterfly is able to come back. And then once you get the butterfly, you get the little caterpillars, and it's the baby birds that eat the caterpillars. So, you know, baby birds eat up to 200 caterpillars a day. So if you don't have the plants that the butterfly lays their eggs on to produce the caterpillars, you won't have the baby birds. That's why it's so important to plant native plants. And like Amber was saying, wild SF gardening, you can plant those in your backyard. And part of this partnership that we're building is to connect that service of the wild SF gardening with our native plant nursery, with Garden for the Environment's classes that educate people on the importance of building healthy soil and providing habitat for pollinators. To tie in with the Climate Action Plan and why these are such important actual global, with global impact, local things that you can do in your own backyard that have global impact. So I tend to you know, kind of get away from myself here. So this is just a really lovely example, natural solutions to climate change. We focus so much, I think because we all suffer from nature deficit disorder. I don't know about all of you on this call, but I grew up in the city. I've never lived outside of the city. And when I first sort of learned about the gravity of the climate crisis in 2006 with Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth, I the only reference point I had was what I had grown up around. So I was thinking about it from the perspective of technological solutions. What are the technological solutions to climate change? Okay, well, we have to produce better batteries that store solar electricity, and we have to produce better solar panels. We have to get off fossil fuels. The other solution, though, is using nature to heal herself, because nature, it's the global carbon cycle that's out of balance, and nature is what regulates the global carbon cycle. So if we restore nature, then we're restoring the global carbon cycle. We already mentioned grasslands, but wetlands are also incredible carbon sequesterers. So this image, I gave a long backstory to get to the point of this image, but this image is showing, trying to show sort of relational graphics of what our historic wetland cover was in the Bay Area, what it currently is, how much wetlands have been destroyed. And then I don't know if anybody on the call knows about Measure AA, but this was passed in 2016, the same year that Trump was elected. But it was a really great thing. It was a 9-county Bay Area measure that raises money over the next 25 years to restore our wetlands. And the reason is to not only do wetlands sequester and store carbon at some of the highest rates of any ecosystem, but they also mitigate against the effects of climate change. So they mitigate against storm surge by acting as a sponge to sort of all the plants and the slow incline up to higher land acts as a sponge when there's storm surge, and also protects us from sea level rise. Wetlands also filter water. They also clean the air. They're also one of the most biologically diverse and productive ecosystems around on the planet. So this is to make the point that wetlands plus restoration plus policy, which is Measure AA, you know, equals climate mitigation. It's also to illustrate the potential and the future and the power of this stuff. And that we're in one of those critical moments right now with the climate action plan that's happening. So that's why we need to become citizen advocates. Our nature organizations, our local neighborhood-based nature organizations, we're putting the stuff into practice. So by having a teaching garden and taking people on walks through the Green Hare Street corridor, we are being advocates. It's, you know, through the education, but there's also these more direct ways that this can happen. And that's by engaging with the climate action plan. So the city of San Francisco just closed the comment period for now. And we had 30% of the comments came to the healthy ecosystem strategy, which I think is a win for our community and the work that we've put in, because most people don't yet understand the power of healthy ecosystems, especially when you're thinking about a city. You think nature's over here and I'm over here and we're separate. And that dichotomy needs to change. That division between humans and nature has to be broken down, because that's like probably the biggest reason why we're in this mess, is because we don't see our dependence, our interdependence, and our role in stewarding nature. So we need to be citizen advocates for nature and also citizen stewards. So I like the word citizen because it implies engagement and responsibility in your city, in your place. And these again are a group of volunteers planting our perennial native grasses on the mountain, on the summit of Mount Susha. So part of this partnership that we're building, that we're hoping, we're requesting funding for, would involve being able to do this kind of work here. So you can put your values into action by volunteering with us, and directly do the work that the Climate Action Plan is calling for, that needs way more funding, by the way. So like one of the climate action plan at this moment is pretty progressive and pretty strong and so exciting to look at all of the different strategies and actions. And you can find it online. You can Google San Francisco Environment Climate Action Plan and you'll easily find it online. But it is not funded. It has not passed. It is not funded. So it goes, it just finished public comment. It's going to go through a process of review by the city agencies who would be tasked with carrying out the plan. That's an opportunity for the agencies to say, my God, I've got so much on my plate already. I don't have money to do the stuff I have on my plate. How are you going to ask me to plant 30,000 more trees? That's impossible, right? And it is, unless we tell the city to give you know, this plan more funding. And more funding for this plan would bring more funding to our organizations to be able to do this kind of work, to connect you to nature and to connect you to the solutions that aren't only for your own benefit here by being able to, you know, enjoy and commune with nature, but also to begin to mitigate some of the damage that we've done, and offer solutions for the future when it comes to climate change. So I get really excited and I feel really inspired and grateful for this opportunity to speak to all of you and to work with these amazing people. And I would love to see you out on a volunteer program. And that's it. Thank you so much. Feel free to contact me. And yes, I will stop my screen share now. If I can figure out how. There we go. Okay.
Thank you all so much. We've got a few things in the chat room here. Laura Castellini said you could also come to the Green Hair Street Corridor open house on Saturday. And there's an Evan Bright link there for a ticket. Nina Moore mentions, I'm so happy to be here. I've got lost trying to plant ugly rock crop up. Plant the ugly rock outcrops on Quintero and Funston. So I guess she needs a little advice. And she said, Trina, do you find that participants in the rain harvesting class have rain buckets provided by the PUC? Maybe Trina, you could mention that.
Sure. I'm not sure when you mean rain buckets, if you mean like rainwater catchment barrels, but there are subsidies available, and you can get though, you can look up the information on getting the subsidies, and you can get those through the Urban Farmer Store here in San Francisco. And they have a wealth of resources about rainwater catchment systems and help facilitate that particular program on rainwater harvesting. And our teacher for that, her name is Kat Sawyer. She's just fantastic. She has worked with GFE to help teach these classes for a long, long time and does a lot of she works with the Watershed Project and just is just a fantastic person to work with. So through the urban, my best advice right now would be to contact the Urban Farmer Store, and they will inform you about the rainwater catchment systems, how to build one, and any subsidies that are available. They're not always available. They come with city funding, but they would be the best people to check with.
Yeah, Betty McDonald said, I'm great to hear your news and comments on the SF climate plan, Amber, and learn about GFA offerings. Trina, thank you very much. And there's a message from Sharp SF, which I believe is Sophia in disguise, who wants to know, can you talk a little more about the Wild SF gardening program?
Yeah, so, Trina had mentioned a lot that was happening during COVID and what we had the opportunity to do at Nature in the City, because we had to shut down a lot of our volunteer opportunities. We had them running almost every weekend, and also our corporate volunteer opportunities. So we ended up putting a lot of our resources into putting backyard habitats in for people. So we actually have a fees for service program that Nature in the City started. I had my own gardening business for years and I folded it into Nature in the City. So we have kind of a biodiversity focus for our gardening practices, a lot like what Trina had mentioned, with very, no chemical input, healthy soils, restoration, native plants, and restoring your existing garden back to health is what we do too. So we don't tell you have to rip out everything and put in native plants. But we try to tell you these plants that you already have are great for the ecosystem in these ways. And these are ways that you can make an even more balanced and even more biodiverse garden. in your backyard or front yard. So we're really excited about that program and we're looking to grow it with help from our WildSF gardening manager.
Are there any other questions from the audience? Any questions between our panelists? It would seem not. I really want to thank our three panelists and your organizations. It's so great to see groups with parallel purposes being able to work together like this. So anyway, I will put a recap of this on the website along with all the links to your organizations. And hopefully people can see that. Also, this entire meeting, if you missed part of it, will be up on the Sharp Facebook page. And you can look at that at your leisure. So thank you everyone else for coming and hope to see you at the next one. We have a meeting coming up. I have to quickly look on May, go here. On Monday, May 3rd, we have the head of the San Francisco Public Library who's going to be doing a meeting with us, telling us about all the things that the public library does. And I've even found things, I'm not a big person to go and read books, but I found out when I was learning Photoshop that this very expensive Photoshop course was available from the library for free. So there are a lot of things there that may not be what you expect, but they're pretty valuable. So anyway, that's it. Thank you very much, everyone. And hope to see you at our next one on May 3rd.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Nice to see familiar faces.
Hi, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for being here. Thanks for having us.
Before you guys go, I really, I had a more practical question for you guys. What would be like the two things that you would recommend that us here, right in the Inner Sunset and the Sunset Heights, that we could do right now to increase biodiversity, especially like in our yards, right? Like what would be those two things that we could do?
Well, we have a really great list of plants that grow in the Sunset District on our website, natureinthecity.org. And if you go to the Green Hair Streak Corridor page, there's a PDF that you can download that has all the native plants that once grew in our soils. And going from that plant list and then asking ILDECO if they've got those plants growing, or Literacy for Environmental Justice Nursery, and going out and finding those plants and really getting them in, because they're local plants, are adapted to your soils. And that's number one. But also number one addendum is try to protect them from gophers. Maybe Trina has some ideas about that.
Go ahead, ILDECO.
Just to put a plug for our dune plants. Like a lot of people think, oh, sand, you can't plant anything in the sand. I have, awful soil. There's a whole suite of plants, dozens and dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of plants that grow in sand that were evolved here in the dunes that support a tremendous amount of wildlife, including the green hair streak butterfly. So,
yeah, I would say that like one of the A1 things you can do is just be curious. Be curious about the plants that are doing well. Be curious about maybe the ones you got and you were hoping would do well, don't do so well. And just think of it all as really valuable learning. Even if you're not a pro or you don't think of yourself as a green thumb, curiosity is the first step. And when you get curious, then you want to learn more, right? And then you might come to a volunteer day with one of the three of us and find out more. And so we'll just say, keep your mind open. There might be moments when you feel overwhelmed. And I always say that, again, if you don't know anything right now about gardening or raising plants or even about San Francisco microclimates, you have a whole world of things to learn. And that's why we're here, because we want to teach you how to do these things. And we want to teach you how to be good stewards of this land. So stay curious, come volunteer with us. Start small with whatever space you have, even if it's a flower pot. start growing things and keep your eyes open with that real, you know, like childlike wonder about your surroundings.